Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, October 31st, 2024. On today's very special, very spooky episode of the show, we are going to do one of the scariest things I can think of. Rank these films of Robert Zemeckis. Terrifying directors in modern Hollywood. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And Slash Film editor and chief film critic Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, guys. So just before we really dig into this here, I think the arc is pretty clear when we're talking about Robert Zemeckis. I feel like it's a widely understood thing that this guy kind of shot out of a cannon in his first several movies and made some bona fide classics. And then in the past, let's call it 20 years, he's kind of gotten lost in technology. He's always been a filmmaker who's been obsessed with incorporating technology and especially motion capture stuff into his work. That kind of defined his work in the early 2000s. And he's kind of lost his way a little bit. There have been maybe little blips that we can talk about along the way of things where it seemed like maybe he was returning to form a little bit. But when you have films like Disney's Pinocchio and The Witches and Welcome to Marwen and things like that in your filmography, back to back, no less, with those three, that's a rough stretch for any director. So I guess before we really kick things off here, do any of you have any other thoughts about Robert Zemeckis aside from that sort of top level analysis of the career trajectory that he's had so far?
I feel like that pretty much covers it. You know, I think one of the other things that maybe to appreciate is that at the very least, even like when the movies are underwhelming or even disappointing, he still manages to get very good performances out of the actors. And that's largely because he's working with like incredible casts. So I guess that's probably like a good thing. And so even though he does let technology kind of overshadow his skill as a filmmaker, and that's become, you know, seemingly the most important part of his career these days. Yeah, you know, I suppose there are worse filmmakers out there.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about his newest movie, which is called Here, that's going to be in theaters tomorrow as you're listening to this. Chris has seen that movie. We're not going to really talk about that at all on today's episode. So we're going to try to talk through some of his filmography here and come up with a joint top five list. So there are several of these movies that I have not seen. Are either of you Robert Zemeckis completists? Have you seen every movie that he's made? I've shared our little podcast document here, and I've listed all of the feature films that he's made. So have either of you seen all of these movies?
I'm honestly only lacking in the recent stuff. I haven't seen Pinocchio, I haven't seen The Witches, and I haven't seen Allied.
Wow, that's a pretty impressive streak there, Brad. What about you, Chris? Are there any that you have not caught up with?
I have not seen The Witches or Pinocchio. I've actually never seen Used Cars either. And that's it. I've actually somehow managed to see all of these other movies, but those are the three I have not seen.
Wow, okay. So I'm pretty far behind you guys. There are several that we'll get to along the way that I have not seen. So let's kick things off with his first movie, which is I Want to Hold Your Hand, which I never saw. Do either of you think that this should be in contention for our top five group list here?
No, it's not going to make the top five. It is a very fun movie, though. It's centered around the Beatles and fans of theirs. It's not going to make the top five.
Okay. His next one is Used Cars. And since Chris and I both have not seen this movie, I'm guessing it won't make the list unless, Brad, you're prepared to make some sort of massive, passionate pitch for it. It's not that I've heard that this is a bad movie or anything. I've actually heard it's very good. I think BJ was trying to convince me to watch it several months ago on the show. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But what do you think about Used Cars, Brad?
Yeah, Used Cars is incredibly fun. It's a really, really enjoyable comedy. But again, not when we're talking about like the kind of great movies that Zemeckis has made, this one's not going to measure up to the top five that we put together.
All right, so Romancing the Stone is his next movie. And this is one that I would make a case for. I love this movie. I wonder what your guys' relationship is to this, because this movie was a big deal for me growing up in my house. Personally, it was like in my rotation a lot. And I love Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner in this, but it's not really a movie that I hear people talk about in 2024. So I wonder if you think we should maybe just move on from this, or if you agree with me that there might be something to putting this in a group top five list here.
I, you know, this is a fun movie. I have not actually seen Romancing the Stone in a long time, so I don't feel like strong enough to make a case for it. I don't remember disliking it. I remember it being entertaining, but I have not watched it since I was a kid, so it's not like fresh in my memory. It doesn't like stand out the way some of his other stuff does.
Yeah, I haven't watched it probably in, I don't know, maybe like a decade, I think. And even then, I think I've only seen it the one time. But it's a solid movie. It's very entertaining. The dynamic, you know, between Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner is there, and like it's a good pinnacle, I guess, of like that kind of like action adventure romance characters at odds kind of relationship. But looking at like what I have in my top five, I just don't know if I'm gonna like concede it sneaking in there.
Okay. Well, yeah, for those of you who have not seen it, the basic premise is it's about a romance novelist played by Kathleen Turner who gets roped into like a real life adventure that is kind of like what one of her characters would experience. And she meets this sort of heroic scumbag type of character played by Michael Douglas, and they strike up this romance, and Danny DeVito plays a supporting role, and it's this sort of globe-trotting treasure hunt movie, basically. It's a lot of fun, so really, really fun stuff there. Back to the Future is the next one up, which I assume we all like. I mean, Peter Cerretta, who founded Slash Film, our old pal, used to host this podcast. That's his favorite movie of all time. Even without the Peter connection, I think all of us love Back to the Future, right?
Pass.
Chris, what do you think about Back to the Future? Have we talked about this movie before?
I don't think we ever have, but yeah, it's a classic for a reason. You can't really beat the first Back to the Future. It just has like a such a good screen. I think this is part of the reason why Robert Zemeckis' decline has been so depressing, because Back to the Future is proof that he can do both special effects and really good story. I mean, he wrote Back to the Future with Bob Gale, and it has like an amazing screenplay. And at some point he just sort of like gave up on the story aspect and was like, I only care about the effects. And it's like, I don't know why that happened, but like for the life of him, he can't tell a good story anymore. I genuinely don't know what happened. Like at some point he like lost that mojo, but like Back to the Future is like proof that like, this guy has the goods, so it's like a weird decline. I genuinely find it almost like fascinating, because like what happened to Robert Zemeckis that he's like lost that juice? But Back to the Future is kind of like a perfect movie, honestly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. It's like there's few movies I think that like easily you can call perfect, and Back to the Future really is one of them. There's a reason that like the screenplay is still taught, you know, in screenwriting classes, because it's just airtight, phenomenal story, great characters, you know, just incredible use of like setups and payoffs, and just it's fantastic.
Yes. Okay, so I'm bolding that one. That'll almost certainly make it in. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the next one up here, and I am also going to make the case for this one. I wonder if there's any pushback at all, because this is another one that I consider to be a classic. Just such a great modern noir movie that is riffing on a lot of these old sort of Sam Spade detective-style tropes, but introducing this insane animation component where animation is interacting with live action in a way that we hadn't really seen before in this to this degree of complexity on the big screen before. Bob Hoskins, I think we wrote in the Slash Film article several years ago, essentially invented what modern acting is, because this was one of the first performances that required him to act opposite a completely digital character or animated character, a character that wasn't there. And that's obviously become so commonplace now that I think, speaking of studying things, you could study Bob Hoskins' performance, and it'll teach you a lot about how to stay in the moment when you don't really have a physical scene partner. So is there anyone who's going to push back against Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
No, not at all.
Yeah, like when I was making my list before I came to the show, I actually had trouble getting to five, so I can't imagine cutting this, because it's definitely just like one of his best movies, and I don't want to say we take this movie for granted now, but this movie was such like a groundbreaking thing for its time. Like there had been other things that had blended live action and animation before, but never like on the level of what this movie does, and it does it like seamlessly. It's like you buy into this world the movie creates, where humans and toons live side by side. And it's so just interesting to watch just how they did this. Yeah, I could not imagine a list of his top five movies without this on it.
Okay, so then we get into Back to the Future Part 2 and Back to the Future Part 3, which he made back to back. And I wonder where these movies might fit in a larger conversation. Because like Chris said, I came up with five, but there are not many of these movies that I would really, really like go to the mat for. And I wonder if one of these sequels might slip into our list. What do you think about these, Brad?
So I love the Back to the Future sequels because they're Back to the Future movies. And I think that they're fun, even though they're significantly more silly than the first movie, almost to a cartoonish level. I always had a special affinity for the second one because of its depiction of the future. And like that kind of became like a cornerstone of like how cool it was to think of like what the future could be like with flying cars and hoverboards. And it was just a really fun, bright, vibrant depiction of, you know, what the future could be. And so like, I enjoy them very much. I've seen them countless times and I'll always love them. As far as the quality of filmmaking is concerned, the stories kind of get lost in like the time travel rules and everything. And you have the actors playing multiple roles, different versions of themselves, you know, being old and whatnot. And the third one that takes it to another extreme with Michael J. Fox playing one of his distant relatives. And so they're enjoyable, but I can't see them making the top five here.
Okay. I also just want to give a quick shout out to Back to the Future Part 3, which I think is maybe the most universally, it's not hated because I think this is a beloved trilogy, but the most universally disliked movie, I think. A lot of people just kind of write this one off and they're kind of like, ah, the Western one, whatever. But I actually think it's a great Western and the production design is amazing. Mary Steenburgen and Christopher Lloyd have a great relationship in it that I really buy. And it adds this new level of sort of dimensionality and emotionality to the Doc Brown character, which I really appreciate. So I think Back to the Future Part 3 is much better than its reputation. So I doubt it's probably going to make our list, but I just wanted to give it its due there. Okay, Death Becomes Her is the next one. I've never seen this. So what do you guys think about this? This seems to be Robert Zemeckis dipping his toe in the waters of horror a little bit. Is that right?
This would make my list just because, like I said, I had a hard time getting to five. But I really love this movie. It's a little messy. It's a little over the top. I don't think it really sticks the landing. But it's got that Tales from the Crypt vibe to it. And Zemeckis is one of the executive producers of the Tales from the Crypt series. So this sort of like feels like him dipping into that. And the effects are great. Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn are just dynamite in this, playing two women who want to kill each other until they become friends for some reason. Bruce Willis is really good at it, playing this really drunk loser guy, which was like, at the time, it was really against type for him because this was still like at like the peak of his career and he was playing this sort of like has-been loser, which he didn't do that often. I really dig Death Becomes Her. I actually just rewatched it at the start of the month to as part of my Halloween season watching, and I really had fun revisiting it.
What do you think about this one, Brad?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun too, particularly because the cast is great. Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn being foils for each other makes for a lot of fun. They just really throw themselves into the parts, and it's a lot of, you know, over the top kind of stuff. Great effects work. It's a really interesting blend of both comedy and horror. Like Chris said, it has kind of like a Tales from the Crypt vibe from it. I don't know if it makes the top five. I definitely don't want to discount it yet. I think it has potential. So I think that one we put like in the middle.
Okay. I'm going to put a star next to that one and we'll come back to it. So let's talk about Forrest Gump, which is, I think, has gained this reputation as being like the ultimate boomer movie and has become like wildly uncool to like Forrest Gump online. And I have to admit that when I see, I've not sat down and rewatched this movie in full in a long time. And when I see clips of it online, or if I stumble across it on cable or something, I understand why the mentality about this movie has shifted. Because when this came out in, what was it, 94 or something, right? It was like such a cultural moment and it felt like the perfect time for a movie like that to come out. And this is an instance where the technology and the effects and everything worked pretty perfectly and all kind of fell in line with what Zemeckis was trying to do with the story. And I think it just worked really well in the moment. But I think it's easy now to look back on this and be like, I don't know about some of these decisions. So I wonder where Forrest Gump sits for both of you. How do you think about that movie in 2024? Brad, we'll start with you.
I also understand why people, you know, kind of cast this one aside and throw shade at it. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it beat Pulp Fiction for Best Picture. And if it hadn't beat Pulp Fiction for Best Picture, I don't think people would be quite so vitriolic towards it. And for me, like, I totally understand why, you know, people want to, you know, push back against it, because it is a little bit saccharine. It's a little bit melodramatic. You know, it's kind of this neat little package, you know, that's painting a kind of a quirky picture of Americana. But for me, like, I also think that's why it works. You know, I don't think that it's necessarily trying to be this, like, realistic, you know, portrait of an actual person or anything like that. It's this kind of American, you know, epic in a way, of this one guy who went through all these different, you know, points in history. You have an incredible performance by Tom Hanks. And yeah, so, like, I think discounting it just feels dismissive. And, like, for me, I would push for it to be in the top five, just because I think that it just assembles so many different pieces of, you know, what elements that you need to make a good film, and does so in a way that has clearly, like, landed with people. It's a crowd pleaser. People, you know, love this movie, and that's not always indicative of quality. But for me, I still think this is a good movie. I wouldn't have given it Best Picture that year, you know, in retrospect, but I think that it's still quite a fantastic film from Robert Zemeckis.
All right, Chris, when you were making your list, did this one make the cut?
It did not. I honestly don't know what my relationship is with this movie at this point. I obviously saw it when it came out, and I watched it over and over again, because it used to be, like, rerun on, like, TNT or TBS all the time.
It still is.
Yeah. And I kind of, like, grew to just to kind of loathe it, but a part of me, like, it's been so long since I've revisited it, a part of me doesn't really know if I loathe it as much as I think I do. Like, I part of me wonders if, like, that was, like, the younger edgelord version of me getting in the way. And I've actually been wondering, like, I should probably go back and rewatch this and see how it plays for me now that I'm, you know, an older guy and, you know, closer to my grave. It would not be on my list, but I'm not going to go as far as to be like, this is an abomination. I just don't really know how I feel about it.
Okay, so let's star it for now, and we'll come back to it. Speaking of coming back to things, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so the next on the list here is Contact. And this feels like a Chris movie. Do you like this movie, Chris?
This is my favorite Robert Zemeckis movie, actually, okay, of all time. I love Contact. And whatever I think about Forrest Gump, I'm grateful it exists, because it gave him carte blanche to do whatever he wanted. And what he wanted to do was Contact. And I know Contact, I don't know what the reputation of Contact is. I know, like, at one point South Park made fun of it, and that sort of, like, entered into the public consciousness, where it's like, let's all laugh at Contact. But I love Contact. I love everything about it. I think it's his best movie. I think it's, like, the perfect encapsulation of his sort of, like, almost corny sentimentality, but it works really well in this movie. Jodie Foster is great. It's also, like, a really challenging, thoughtful blockbuster. You know, it's a movie that grapples with science and faith in a way that, especially now, blockbusters do not really touch. I can't remember, like, I can't think of another, like, movie from this era and beyond it that, like, goes to these levels. Like, this movie is questioning faith, and it's questioning, you know, the place of faith in the world of science. And it's that, those are, you know, those are difficult topics. And the fact that the movie, like, embraces them head on and doesn't shy away from them, I think is just kind of wonderful. And it has some incredible filmmaking techniques on display. It's sort of, it's gone viral in the last few years, but there's a shot. It's like this long tracking shot that follows Jodie Foster's character when she's a kid. She's played by Jenna Malone, down a long hallway, and it's slowly revealed that the whole shot is taking place inside of a mirror. And it's like, you can't even like fathom how he actually created it. It works so well. And the whole movie is just loaded up with stuff like that. It's not like overly showy, I guess, like some of his other movies, but I don't know. I love this movie so much.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember there being, like you said, sort of an emotionality to it that really works. Like, some of his stuff feels, I think Brad used the word saccharine when talking about Forrest Gump, like that there's a sentimentality or something to some of his movies that kind of like can be a little cringy. And in my memory, Contact strikes the perfect balance of being extremely emotional without necessarily tipping over into that kind of eye rolling territory. But Brad, I'm guessing you've seen Contact more recently than I have. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, honestly, Chris encapsulated it pretty well. I don't really have much more to say than that. For me personally, it's not my favorite Robert Zemeckis movie, but it's definitely way up there. And for all the reasons that Chris said, yeah, I love the way it approaches both faith and science. It's a compelling story. There's a cool twist, you know, at the end, even all the performances are outstanding. Yeah, I love this movie.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and bold this, because especially if it's Chris's favorite of Zemeckis' entire filmography, I think this should make the list. It might end up being a little bit lower in terms of our ranking, but we'll see when we get to that slot. Okay, so next up we have What Lies Beneath, which was a really surprising turn for Harrison Ford at the time. Michelle Pfeiffer's in this. This is, again, a little bit of a horror kind of thriller type of space for him, a little unusual for his filmography. Chris, what do you think about What Lies Beneath these days?
You know, I do not love What Lies Beneath. I appreciate what he's trying to do. He's trying to make this sort of like modern Hitchcock riff. And I kind of like it's a spoiler, but the movie came out a long time ago, so who cares? I kind of like the twist that Harrison Ford turns out to be the bad guy, for lack of a better term, because that's not a role. I can't really think of many other Harrison Ford is the bad guy movies. That's just something that doesn't happen. So I kind of appreciate that. And, you know, I like Michelle Pfeiffer, but I don't know. I remember not liking this when it came out, and I revisited it probably a year or two ago, and I liked it even less. It just does not really do much for me. Even though I love the horror genre, I love the thriller genre, I love ghosts. This movie has ghosts in it. It just does not work for me.
I remember seeing this in the theater and being really into it at the time, and that was the only time I ever saw it. So I guess I don't really have detailed memories of it, but what do you make of this movie, Brad?
I think that this is a perfectly fine thriller. It's cool to see Harrison Ford in this role. Michelle Pfeiffer is always great. I never particularly loved this one either. I always just thought, like, yeah, okay, this is, you know, what I expected this movie to be, and I don't really think about it much.
Well, I would say I want more movies to be like this now, but I don't think that necessarily means that it should make our list. So we can go ahead and move on past What Lies Beneath to Castaway, which is the next one, which, once again, I think this any list of the best Robert Zemeckis movies feels incomplete to me without Castaway. So I think this should be on here. Talk about great Tom Hanks performances, like literally holding the whole movie on his shoulders. It's there are not that many actors that could pull off something like that at that time. And yeah, it's just great stuff. This one holds up really, really well, I think. But what do you guys think about Castaway?
Yeah, I would go as far as to say is, like, I think I said this in my review of Here. I think this is the last good Robert Zemeckis movie. Like, and the fact that he made it 24 years ago is kind of depressing. he's made several movies since then, but this is the last one I would consider genuinely good. And yeah, this would be on my list too. Tom Hanks is just so good in this. I mean, the fact that the movie makes you care about a volleyball, I know that became like a joke after a while. And it's, you know, that's another thing that became a joke in the pop culture consciousness, but Like, I remember when this movie came out and I saw it in theater, like that scene where Wilson floats away, you get emotional. Like, you get emotional at Tom Hanks being sad that he's losing a volleyball. And the fact that the movie makes that work is no small feat.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, and the way it's similar to, you know, Bob Hoskins and his acting in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Tom Hanks' performance when he's interacting with Wilson as if it were a full-on actor, you know, that those are great scenes. And yeah, Tom Hanks is just spectacular in this movie. This would be on my list for sure.
Okay. All right. So I think we can move pretty quickly through the latter stage Zemeckis stuff. Polar Express and Beowulf are two of these motion capture projects.
And A Christmas Carol.
Oh yeah, that's right. And Christmas Carol. Yeah. Three in a row. I don't think any of these really work. I watched A Christmas Carol for the first time in a long time, probably about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and was just kind of horrified by it. the Polar Express, I remember being horrifying in that sort of uncanny valley way. Like, that's the big knock against that movie. I think the book, The Polar Express, is a masterpiece, and the story is pretty good, and the adaptation is actually okay. But it's just the visual style and the look of the movie just kind of, I was not able to be immersed in the story in the way that Zemeckis wants me to, which is a common refrain in this later period of his work, I think. So I don't know, do we have any support for any of these three movies? Do any of you feel like Beowulf is a secret classic or something?
None of them would make my list. I feel like of the three of them, Beowulf is the only one that's like kind of interesting. Kind of watchable, I guess, but even that has that uncanny valley thing. I loathe the Polar Express because when I was growing up, that book, the Chris Van Allsburg book, was like one of my favorite like kids' books that I read. And I just find the movie just like hideous. Yeah. There's a scene where like Steven Tyler is an elf. It's like, stop it. This just makes me angry. I just do not like the movie.
Wow, I don't remember that. Maybe I should take my statement back about being a good adaptation.
Yeah, because like, they turn into a musical as well. Like, they have to add so much to it to pad out the story, because The Polar Express is a pretty simple story, but like they have to beef it up so much for the movie that like I also hate it a lot.
Yeah, like the part of the reason that, and this is true of like all Chris Van Allsburg books, part of the thing that made the book so great is that artwork. It has like really beautiful painterly artwork. And to take that and make it this like digital nonsense, and there's like all this like goofy crap going on. Like Tom Hanks is like, not only is he the conductor, but he's like Santa Claus. He's also like a ghost that's on the train for some reason.
A hobo too.
Yeah, it's like, what is going on with this? I don't. I kind of loathe that this movie has become like a holiday staple. Like I guess people like who grew up with it like it, and I'm sure there's stuff I grew up with that's absolute trash too. But it bothers me that this has been like entered into like the Christmas consciousness. Every time Christmas rolls around, people talk about revisiting this. I want to be like, why? Like, there's so many better movies.
Okay, so I think it's fair to say that none of these movies are going to make it onto our list. Flight is from 2012, I think, is when that came out. I might have that year wrong. Let me double check that.
You're right.
Okay, 2012. Yeah, Flight. So this is the one that I was alluding to earlier, where I feel like in the later period of Zemeckis' career, this was the one where it felt to me like, oh, man, he's not completely gone. Like, maybe there actually is life in him yet, and maybe he hasn't completely lost the touch. So I think Flight is like pretty decent. I don't know if I would go as far as to say it should be in the top five, but I definitely think it is much better than a lot of the stuff that he's made in the past 25 years. So I don't know if we have any secret Flight fans on the podcast today or what. What do you guys think about this one?
I agree that it's decent. Denzel is good in it. John Goodman is good in it, but they always are. And yeah, I think it's a pretty serviceable drama, but not top five contender.
Okay. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I would say I don't really like Flight. I do think the plane crash sequence is really good. Like that, the whole thing where he has to fly the plane upside down to land it and stuff like that is handled really well. But I kind of feel like the movie falls apart after that. Like, it has this whole subplot about what's her name, Kelly Riley, is like a alcoholic or something, and I was like, I don't care about any I don't know, I just did not like I feel like once you get beyond the plane sequence, the movie goes downhill really quickly.
Yeah, Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so The Walk is the next one. And this one came out in 2015. And a big part of this movie's selling point was the sort of like the 3D IMAX of it all. And the idea of it's a adaptation of this great documentary called Man on Wire, which is about this real thing that happened in the mid 1970s, where this high wire artist put a wire between the World Trade Center towers and tightrope walked across the space between them, which is this sort of magical moment of like, oh my God, I can't believe a human actually can do this. And it's kind of this magical experience. So the documentary is great. I'm not really sure that the movie holds up outside of the context of the 3D boom that was going on in Hollywood at that time. But again, I'm maybe in the minority there. So what do you guys think about this?
I'm about the same. I remember thinking that the documentary was already great, and like this movie just didn't feel like it did anything better or different enough. And the way it tried to dramatize a little bit more, it wasn't interesting enough to make me care about it any more than the documentary already did. And while the theatrical experience in 3D, I do remember, did offer an interesting feeling, I think it felt more like a theme park ride than it did like a proper, you know, film experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any thoughts about The Walk, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, really the only thing that I remember from this movie, the only thing that stands out from this movie is Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing that terrible accent. And yeah. Like, I know he had to do that because the real guy has an accent. He's French. But I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think he's a good actor. He should not ever do accents. Like in like Snowden, he does a voice too, and that's really bad. Like, he should just not do voices. He should just do his own voice and stick with that. He's not good at doing voices. It's just like,
I don't know. There was that one really good part in The Walk, though, where he went, ha, ha, ha.
It's like, yeah, it's such a broad accent. It's so like, oh, I'm French. He's like, the movie opens and he's like in the sky and he's like, welcome to the sky. And I'm like, I don't like this. Like, turn this off.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I like him as well. But yeah, that's a bit of a miss there. Okay, so the next movie, we only have a few more here. The next movie is Allied from 2016. And this, I was actually intrigued by this. I remember liking the trailer and I just, for some reason, never got around to seeing this. So what do you guys think about Allied? Any reason why this should make it into our list here?
I haven't seen it.
I've seen it. I've seen a lot of people go to bat for this and be like, oh, this is one of his better later movies. I just don't agree. It feels very artificial. Like every background looks like it's CGI. I don't know if it is or not. I haven't like read up on the movie enough, but it just feels fake. It feels like he's trying to make this classic spy thriller and it just does not work for me at all. Like everything just seems like flat and off, and I can't really like even put my finger on what it is. It just doesn't work.
Okay. Well, speaking of doesn't work, I think Welcome to Marwen, another adaptation of a documentary, is probably not going to make the list. And then The Witches and Pinocchio. Yeah, no, that's just not going to happen. There's no way. So these last three movies, that's a no. All right. So right now we have four movies that are bolded, which are Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Contact, and Castaway. And then we have two movies that have stars next to them, which is Death Becomes Her and Forrest Gump. So any strong feelings about which of those should make it?
Well, I personally prefer Death Becomes Her, but I also feel like Forrest Gump probably has to make the list.
I mean, we can do whatever we want, Chris. We don't have to.
No, I know, but it was like between those two, Forrest Gump feels like the movie that had the biggest impact, you know, the movie that like will stand the test of time or whatever. I mean, although, you know, the reaction to it has become negative over the years, it was such a huge deal when it came out. It was a huge hit, won a ton of Oscars.
I think it's a better made movie too. Like Death Becomes Her is a lot of fun. It's very enjoyable, but like Forrest Gump just feels like a more cohesive, complete movie, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was easy. So we'll just go ahead and bold Forrest Gump and we'll remove Death Becomes Her from our list of contention. So now it's just a matter of figuring out the order for this group top five. So once again, the movies are Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, Contact, and Castaway. So We have a decision here. Which order do you guys want to do this? From number one, like, should we establish what the number one is and go that way, or should we sort of work our way up to number one? What do you think?
That's a good question. I wonder if starting with number one is going to be easier.
Probably. Let's start with number one. Let's do that.
God, there's a little part of me that wants to try to make a case for Who Framed Roger Rabbit at number one, but just because I feel like every list probably has Back to the Future at number one. But Back to the Future, like you guys said, it's the perfect movie. It's so good. It is kind of undeniable that it's so great that it has to be number one, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine any list of Zemeckis movies not being topped by Back to the Future. Like, it just makes the most sense.
Yeah, like, my personal list would have Contact at number one, but Back to the Future is kind of the movie that made Robert Zemeckis Robert Zemeckis. It's like the thing that, like, put him on the map, really. So,
and it's genre defining too. Like, I mean, like time travel movies have to go out of their way to break the conventions established by Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's number one. So yeah, what do we do about number two? I mean, it sounds like all of us love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Does that mean that it's an automatic number two in this context?
It's pretty close, but a case could be made for Contact as well, I think.
Yeah. I kind of would like to go with Contact personally. I would go Contact then Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. It's been a while since I've seen Contact, but
especially because I think, obviously, as great as Who Framed Roger Rabbit is, a lot of its greatness does rely on emulating film like elements and tropes that already existed in a way. It's just remixing them in a way that is refreshing and interesting. And Contact, I feel like, does something much more original and in a way powerful. So I think Contact being a number two is a good move.
Okay, that's a good case. I like that. All right, so now it's just a matter of four and five. Between Forrest Gump and Castaway. So I think Castaway's got to be four and Forrest Gump's got to be five, right?
That's what I would go with, yeah.
Yeah, I think just to even out, like, the idea, because, like, putting Forrest Gump on the list is, like, it felt necessary, and I think acknowledging its shortcomings and the fact that it maybe hasn't aged as well as other, you know, Best Picture winners. And I think, yeah, I feel like that's a good move, is Forrest Gump at number five, Castaway number four.
Okay, I love this list. So we got Back to the Future, Contact, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Castaway, and Forrest Gump as our group top five here. Any closing thoughts on the work of Robert Zemeckis before we wrap it up today, gentlemen? Chris, anything from you?
Boy, I would like him to make something good again, because here is not it.
Little teaser for tomorrow's episode.
Yeah.
Okay, Brad, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't know what he's missing. I don't know, you know, what the deal is, why he can't get a story that, like, seems to connect with people again. But I hope he finds something before his career is wrapped up, because it would be nice to have something worth, you know, talking about again.
I'm going to look something up real quick. Do any of you know when the last time he worked with Bob Gale was? I wonder if that might be sort of the secret sauce. Like, going back to that collaboration could be a thing that maybe gives him a little bit of a spark again. I don't know. It looks like, wow, yeah, it looks like 1996 Bordello of Blood, which was that a
why wasn't that on our list?
Was that a feature film? Did I miss that one?
He didn't direct it. He came up with the story, and he was like a producer, because he's a Tales from the Crypt movie.
And it was a movie, yeah.
Okay, so they have worked together, but it has been a long time since Back to the Future. I mean, they've worked together. So, I would love to see maybe those guys team up again and maybe crank something out for us that could place higher on a list like this. So.
Yeah, what is Bob Gale up to, man? He's probably just, like, kicking back. Like, I never have to work again. He's just cashing those Back to the Future checks, probably. That's what I would be doing.
Gale is, like, the brand ambassador for Back to the Future these days.
Yeah.
He's, like, always out there, like, plugging comic books and, like, the stage show, like, the Broadway show of Back to the Future. I think he was heavily involved in the creation of that. He's, like, the anytime Back to the Future is, like, mentioned in an official capacity, Bob Gale is there. That's, like, his gig. He's so passionate about that franchise still. I saw them play I want to say it was like the LA Symphony Orchestra or something play the score for Back to the Future live at the Hollywood Bowl in 2018 or something like that. And
Bob Gale parachuted in and was like, hey, you guys talking about Back to the Future?
He didn't parachute in, but he did introduce the whole thing. And he like showed up on stage and got this big standing O, and it was like a big deal. So he loves Back to the Future. So I guess that's what he's doing. But
Bob Gale's here in my room right now waiting to say something about Back to the Future, but I'm not letting him.
All right, Bob, you'll wait your turn, and maybe we'll do a Back to the Future centric episode that we'll have you on one of these days. But
give me a sandwich, Bob.
That's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all of these Robert Zemeckis movies at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show. Thanks for listening, and have a happy Halloween, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.